the series, we have titled it, Three Things I Learned from a Movie I Didn't Want to See. You should have seen the creative meeting for this series title. It was epic. No, we just decided to go real direct and straightforward. This is what this series is about. We're talking about this movie called Wonder. My wife said, hey, I think we ought to watch this. I was like, no, that's going to make me cry. Why would I want to do that? And then as it turns out, I thought, no, this isn't just a good movie. This really is a movie everybody ought to see. And if you end up seeing Wonder, which I hope you do, because I think every person on the planet ought to see this movie, I think that you will like it. And I would imagine you will cry. If you don't, you should probably get that checked out. That's called, in the Christian world, that's called a hard heart. But I think that it's more than just sad. It's inspirational. It has so many things that we can take from it and learn from it. The first week, we talked about the big line that gives the movie its name, where Julia Roberts, the mother of Augie Pullman, looks at Augie and says, Augie, you are a wonder. And as we learned in the first week, being a wonder is not so much about the hand that you've been dealt. It's way more about what you do with the hand that you've been dealt. And because of that, every one of us has an opportunity in front of us to become a wonder, to be a wonder based on the way that we deal with the hand that has been dealt to us. Last week, we talked about this quote right here, be kind, for everyone is fighting a hard battle. It's crazy. I mean, if we were to go around all the rooms, if we were to go around, let every person share, hey, well, what is your hard battle? We would realize that all of us, genuinely all of us, are fighting some sort of difficult battle. Maybe you feel like it's getting the best of you. Maybe you feel like you're winning. But no matter who you are, everybody's got a battle. And the more aware we are of each other's battle, the better we can actually learn to love each other. The better we can actually learn to show kindness to each other. That your ability to be kind or love somebody that's difficult in your life, it really hinges upon the work that you've done to get to know their story, to get to know their battle. So as we said last week, that you can love that person way better when you learn a little bit more about that person's battle. And if you missed all those, or if you missed both of those, I hope that you'll check those out. As for this week, we're going to talk about the relationship between those two characters that you just saw, Augie Pullman and this sweet, awesome kid named Jack. I think Jack's last name is Will, and so they call him Jack Will, which is confusing because you can't tell, is that a double name or is that his full name? I think it's his name. Jack Will is this awesome kid who originally, he gets assigned to be Augie's friend, which friendships don't work really well when you get assigned to them, right? But eventually he chooses it. He chooses it himself. He decides, hey, I'm going to go sit by this kid at lunch. And the scene that you saw is the way their relationship was really birthed. That they started talking about things that they each struggled with, problems that they each had. Augie makes that line, I feel like when I eat, I look like a prehistoric swamp turtle, and so I don't like doing that in public. And then Jack, with so much empathy and kindness and love, he sticks his face in his sandwich, gets tuna all over his face, and says, look at me, I'm the tuna man. And that's the way middle school boys communicate. You know what I mean? Those of you that have them, that's love. That's kindred spirits. That's friendship in their world. They end up fighting with swords, and they end up having arm wrestling contests, and they end up playing video games together, and they become that relationship that each of them needs, that friend that is the wind in the sails. Every one of us needs that. We all know that. We all need those kind of relationships that provide the wind in our sails. Instead of me just telling you about it, because I'm trying to convince you with words of something that you know to be true, but it's so much deeper than just spoken words. It's actually something that you feel. And nothing allows us to experience emotion, in my opinion, like music. And in this scene where the two of them are getting to know each other, there's a song that's playing in the background that really helps you connect with the depth of their friendship and the meaningfulness of their friendship. And so instead of me just telling you about it, I thought, why don't we just play it? Why don't we just let you experience the song? And so we reached out to a friend of ours named Haley, and she's got a decent voice, which makes it all the better. I'm kidding. She has an incredible voice, but she's an amazing person. And so I thought, why don't we just let you experience this? And so while she's singing this, I want you to just think about that first friend that you had. Or maybe it's the friend that has helped you through your difficult situations. But here is Haley Sheffield.
fall is here. Hear the yell, back to school. Ring the bell, brand new shoes. Walking blues, climb the fence. Books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Walk with me, Susie Lee, through the park and by the tree. We will rest upon the ground. Look at all the bugs we found. Safely walk to school without a sound. Safely walk to school without a sound. Here we are, there's no one else. We walk to school all by ourselves. There's dirt on our uniforms. Chasing all the ants and worms. We clean up and now it's time to learn. We clean up and now it's time to learn. Numbers, letters, learn to spell. Nouns and books and show and tell. Playtime, we will throw the ball. Back to class and through the hall. Teacher marks our height against the wall. Teacher marks our height against the wall. We don't notice any time. We don't notice anything. We sit side by side in every class. Teacher thinks that I sound funny, but she likes the way you sing. She likes the way you sing. Oh, 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 oh. We don't notice any typewriters. We don't notice anything. We sit side by side in every class. She thinks that I sound funny, but she likes the way you sing. Tonight I'll dream while I'm in bed. Silly thoughts go through my head about the bugs and alphabet. And when I wake tomorrow, I'll bet you and I will walk together again. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. So I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
You and I will walk together again because I can tell that we are going to be friends. That just is so true about those certain relationships in our life, isn't it? Those relationships that you come to trust, the ones that you come to love, the ones that you come to lean on, the ones that you know are going to be there when the going gets tough. The ones that you know are the wind in your sail kind of relationships. But what happened, though? What happened between Jack and Augie? Because though they had this, something broke. There was a moment in the movie, it's one of the most sad, heartbreaking moments. And for those of you that are afraid of spoilers, I'm going to spoil it and share this scene with you. But you still should watch the movie because it doesn't ruin the movie for you. But there's this one particular scene that happens. It actually happens on Halloween. And Augie tells us how much he loves Halloween because he loves that he gets to wear a mask. And he said, it's amazing how when I wear this mask, I just feel so normal. I feel like people treat me like I'm normal. And he was supposed to wear one costume, but something happened and he ends up having to wear a different costume. And because of that, when he enters into the room at school, Jack, his really close friend, doesn't realize it's him. And some of the other friends that are talking about Augie, that have not been so kind to Augie, begin to be critical toward Jack as to why are you even friends with this guy? Julian, one of the biggest bullies, he tells Jack, he says, I mean, if I looked like he looked, I'd wear a mask all the time. But it gets worse because Jack takes it a step further. He feels like they've egged him on and he feels like in order to fit in, this is what I've got to do. And you can tell he doesn't even mean it, but he says something incredibly hurtful that Augie overhears. He says, Yeah, if I looked like he looked, I would kill myself. And as you watch it, you just think that is the most devastating and sad thing. And who would say that? And it just tears at the very fabric of their relationship. It almost destroys their relationship. You see the rest of the movie, Augie trying to pick up the pieces of the broken heart that Jack Will has now caused him. And as I watched it, there's so many different emotions that you have watching that. But all of us can relate on so many different levels. I mean, all of us in a way have been Jack, where we've been the good friend that others needed. And then all of us have had moments where we let the person down, where we dropped the ball, where we said something we didn't even believe, something that was incredibly hurtful, but something that we didn't even mean, or we said it at the wrong time, or at the wrong volume, or in the wrong moment, just because we were defensive, or because we were trying to fit in, or because we were just trying to get by. Who knows? But we've all been there where we've not shown up because we were late, maybe, or we forgot about it, or it didn't get on our calendar, or we just missed the moment. And then we've all been where Augie's been, where someone says something incredibly hurtful about you that is just devastating. But as I watched Jack Will, I wanted so badly for it to be different. I wished so much that it was different, because I knew that he was the kind of person that wanted to do the right thing. I could tell he was the kind of kid that really wanted to be a good friend. He wanted to be an encouragement to Augie. But what happened? Why did he miss the moment? Why did he drop the ball? Why did he fail in such a terrible way? Because like you and me that want to do the right thing, too often we want to do the right thing when it's right for me. If it's convenient, I'll jump in. But what about when it's not convenient? What about when it's just hard? What about when it just takes effort? It just feels like I'm going to have to work overtime and I don't really want to, because I'm just tired, or because I got my own struggles, or because it would be too much energy to have to clean up the house, or I don't want to go because it's too far, or saying something might be awkward, or to have to write it down would just be weird, or I don't know how they're going to respond, or maybe I didn't even realize it and I just got in my own world. There's 100,000 different reasons why, but we just so often we succumb to the same pressure that he felt, that it's just not convenient for me to be your friend right now. I would rather fit in. See, what I've realized over time is that the energy required to be a wind in the sail kind of friend sometimes just feels like too much. Can you relate? Sometimes being a wind in the sail kind of parent sometimes feels too much. Sometimes being a wind in the sail kind of sibling, or a wind in the sail kind of coworker, you know you want to, but it just feels too much. It just feels like it's just too hard. We say things like, I just can't today, you know? I mean, any other day maybe, but today I just can't. I just don't have the energy for it. I don't have the time for it. Maybe you feel like they don't even appreciate it. They've never acknowledged it, and I'm just done, and I just can't. Well, throughout the New Testament, there are numerous moments where we are instructed on how we're supposed to live, right? But there's a big difference between what we're supposed to do and what we end up doing. This particular writer that we talk about so often, because he really is the forerunner for so many churches, he wrote in this little letter, this letter we call Philippians, he wrote it to this church in Philippi. His name is Paul. Paul's trying to tell us, hey, if you're a Jesus follower, you got to get this right. He was trying to create little communities of people that were known by their extravagant love toward one another. Fortunately, he nailed it, and he started all these churches, and now churches get this right all the time, right? Or not. I mean, this is crazy, but so many people's deepest, darkest hurt happened within church, happened within the community of people that were a part of the church, which makes it even more difficult. But he gives us the bar. He gives us the goal. He says, hey, in your relationships, here's what I want you to do. Here's what I'm telling you would be out of the ordinary, next level kind of love. So he begins in chapter 2 of Philippians by saying, hey, if you feel any kind of encouragement from Jesus, if you've ever had any kind of comfort from Jesus, if you've ever felt connected to his suffering, then I want you to be one. Unite together and be one. And then he explicitly and specifically tells us what that looks like. In Philippians 2, verse 3 and 4, he gives us three simple but really difficult instructions on how we can be the kind of wind in the sail friend that we all want to be. Here's the first one in Philippians 2, verse 3. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, meaning I'm really in this thing for me. I'm not really in this for you. In other words, if this were a hashtag squad goal, have you ever had any hashtag squad goals? This is something that every now and then will start trending on the social media forums that we all are so addicted to. And here's the first one. It's to number one, don't make it about me. This is what he's saying. He's saying your tendency in relationships is to make it about you, but don't do that. No. If you can, to the best of your ability, make it about the other person. Don't make it about you. Don't have selfish ambition or vain conceit. Don't get competitive. But instead, I am committing to you that I'm not going to make it about me. I'm going to make it about you. Next little phrase he says, but rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Now, is the other person more valuable than you are? No, right? I mean, we're all valuable. We're all humans that have intrinsic value, but he says, treat the other person like they're more valuable than you. The place that is so easy for us to recognize this is any time we've ever bumped into a celebrity. Has this ever happened to you? I remember when I was eating lunch one day in Buckhead at a delicious chicken place called Roasters, and the Biebs walked in. Justin Bieber himself. Now, I'm not a huge Justin Bieber fan. I would say no more than you are. But I like his music. I enjoy his stuff. And he's a legit celeb. And he walked into Roasters one day. I was sitting there eating lunch with my friend Brad. And we're just having lunch. And hate to say it, but for the rest of our lunch, I had a hard time paying attention to anything that he was saying. Because I was taking care of the Biebs every need. I was over there watching out for him, seeing what was going on. People started recognizing that he was there, and people started coming over to get autographs. I could tell he was interrupting his lunch, and so I decided I'm going to jump in. And I started bringing a little bit of order to the situation. He needed a Sharpie, and I pulled one out of my pocket. I promise you, I pulled a Sharpie out of my pocket. Why it was in there, I have no idea. I felt like it was God, though. One of those God moments, you know? Not really. And I handed the Biebs the marker. I was waiting right there on his every need. Anything you need, I got it. I'm here for you. What can I do? I was treating him like he was more valuable than me. He's not. I'm sorry. He's not. But I was treating him like he is. And you've done the same thing. You've had the same kind of experience. He's saying, well, just handle your relationships like that. Treat the other person like the other person is more valuable than you. In humility, lift the other person up. Here's what I found in relationships as another hashtag squad goal. I actually rise when I lift you up. Same thing for you. You actually rise when you lift someone else up. We don't rise when we have to lift ourselves up, but it's like a seesaw in life that when I actually lift you up, it gives me the lift that I actually am looking for to lift me up. This is what he's saying. He's saying if you value the other person above yourself, if you lift them up, it will actually make you feel better about yourself. This is amazing that life works this way, but I believe God has actually designed us as humans to experience positive gratification when this happens. Next little phrase he gives us. He says, not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of the other. Not looking to what is interesting to you, but each of you to the interest of others. One of the places where I experience this the most is with my kids. You know, if you have kids, or if you've been around kids, if you've got nieces or nephews, or if you've got grandkids, or if you've got ever been around kids at all, you recognize sometimes they care about things that you don't care about. I'm not trying to throw shade on anybody who's into Pokemon cards, all right? But I've never really been into Pokemon cards. I just missed it by a couple of years, fortunately. But my kids, I've got a couple kids that are really into Pokemon cards. And as not interested in it as I am, there are moments at my best, which are very rare, where I try to act interested in Pokemon cards. I'm not actually interested in them, but I recognize that in this moment, the most loving thing I could do, the most wind in the sail kind of parent I could be, is to act like I'm interested in what they're interested in. But the same thing happens to us all the time. Paul's saying, hey, if you want to be that kind of wind in the sail kind of friend, then you've got to not do anything out of selfish ambition. Say, hey, I'm not going to make this about me. I'm going to make this about you. You've got to lift the other person up. And as you do, you realize that you actually rise in the meantime. And then thirdly, you've got to decide, I'm going to bounce my eyes to your interests. When my eyes start gravitating to what I'm interested in, I'm going to make them bounce over to yours. I'm going to try to, as best as I can, keep my eyes off just what's important to me and try to bounce them over to you. This is what Augie experienced early on in his relationship with Jack. Jack was going out of the way. He was bending over backwards to be the kind of friend that he knew Augie needed and the kind of friend that he wanted to be. At the very end of the movie, after some reconciliation had taken place between the two of them, they're at the school assembly where all of these quotes actually come from. And Augie gets a standing ovation because the principal gives him this award. And as he's walking up to the stage, the music starts to play, and all of the crowd gets up on their feet, and they start giving him a standing ovation, and you can feel the emotion. And Augie says this beautiful, fantastic quote as he's trying to connect his emotions, what he's feeling, with what Jack Will had done for him to what he was experiencing right there with this standing ovation. And he says this. He says, I think they ought to make it a rule that everyone should get a standing ovation at least once in their lives. Don't you agree? What a great line. And as he makes this statement, the camera pans over to Jack, and you see Jack just beaming with a smile at his friend who's getting a standing ovation, and he's just clapping his heart out. What was Augie feeling in that moment? I mean, he was feeling something. And what I know to be true, what you know to be true, is that oftentimes in life, people that get standing ovations on a regular basis, they would even recognize it seems that they get old, or they're not that special after a while. I mean, why do we do them? Why do we give people ovations? An ovation, in case you were wondering, an ovation is an enthusiastic outburst of public praise, appreciation, and celebration. An ovation is usually determined by someone who has done something well, someone who has done a great performance, someone who has a great talent or a great skill that we respect or we appreciate. But what Augie was experiencing was so much deeper than what we usually give an ovation for. Augie was experiencing something at the heart level. Someone hadn't just recognized a performance that he had done. No, someone had connected with him. And see, I think that he was connecting the emotion that he felt that Jack had allowed him to feel with this standing ovation. See, what we all really want is what Jack had done for him. We all really want to be seen. He had let him know, Augie, I see you. But more than that, not just I see you, but at a deeper level, I understand you. We all really want to be understood. He let him know, hey, I get that what you're going through is really difficult. And as we have shared life together, as we have listened to each other and shared the way we feel about things, I now understand that what you're going through is really, really tough. And then we all really want to be accepted. And I accept you just as you are. I'm not asking you to change. I'm telling you on your good days, I accept you. And on your bad days, on your tough days, on your difficult days, I accept you. And I recognize that we all really just want to be loved. That he was experiencing the love of a friend in that moment. The place that I've experienced this in life, it wasn't a standing ovation, but it was a time in my life where I needed someone to see me and to understand me and to accept me and to love me and to cheer me on, let me know that they were there for me and to encourage me. I remember for me, it happened when I was 23 years old. I had just graduated from Georgia Tech. I struggled getting out of Georgia Tech. There were a couple of classes that were tripping me up. And so just to make sure that I knew my stuff, I took them over again a couple of times. And so that delayed my graduation a bit, threatened it, quite honestly. I was in a very vulnerable position, but fortunately I did get out. I use this joke all the time, but I promise you this is true. I told the registrar, I said, listen, I'm going to seminary. I wanted to go to graduate school to get a degree in theology. I said, I'm never going to use this engineering degree. Never. Okay? So why don't we do a deal? You give it to me. I'll promise to never use it. How about that? Let's make a trade. Deal or what? Like, sounds good to me. I swear to you, I will never use it. You just do your part and give it to me. We'll be done. Shake hands. We're out. And so she said yes, which is awesome. So I go to Dallas, Texas. I'm going out to Dallas, Texas to go to seminary, to Turbo Bible School. This is graduate school to get a degree in theology. And for whatever reason at the time, they had this dorm that they didn't know what to do with, I guess. And so they required every first year male student to live in this dorm. And this dorm, I don't want to overstate this and try to belittle any of you that have spent time in prison, but it felt like a prison to me, okay? I mean, it was cold, it was dingy, it smelled nasty, it was just so bleak and bland, and it had, seminary students aren't known for partying really hard, but this dorm looked like it had seen its fair share of some good times. It seemed like it had been ridden hard and hung up wet. You know what I'm saying? It was tired. And the drive out there, I didn't know I was about to experience that, but it was one of those days. You know, Texas in the summer, obviously it can be like the face of the sun, incredibly hot. But then in the winter, the toughest thing is that it can be bleak. I mean, it can be like blisteringly cold in Dallas. And this was one of those days right at the beginning of January. And it was gray, like the sun was like, I'm just not doing it today, I'm not feeling it. So like loads of cloud coverage, like totally gray, just an ugly day, freezing cold. And we make that boring drive out there, and my awesome dad, I mean, I have had the pleasure of getting raised by two parents that have done this really well. They have really been cheerleaders for me. He said, hey, I'll ride with you out there. And so we jump in my Volvo 240 DL packed with as much stuff as I could fit in there. And we're driving out there to Dallas. And we pull up to the dorm. And I honestly, I'm just not feeling it. I was 23, so I was not real excited about living in a dorm at that point in my life. It really, it was just not what I wanted. It was not what I was looking forward to doing at all. And I wasn't really sure if I was making the right decision. I was kind of nervous about, is this the right career path? And do I have what it takes? And wow, if you have to feel spiritual to do this, I certainly don't. And so I don't even know if I'm supposed to be doing this or not. And then we find out, go to the office where they tell you, okay, here's where you're supposed to be going. And we go upstairs, walk up to the dorm room. And I'll never forget opening up that door and looking at this nasty, disgusting, bland, bleak, awful room. And I'll never forget, I'm standing here, my dad's right over my shoulder, and as soon as I'm about to, I wanted to turn around and go back home, he goes, this is awesome. And I was like, what? And he was like, this is incredible. I mean, this is perfect. This is exactly what you need. This is going to be fantastic. I'm so excited for you. This is exactly where you're supposed to be. This is going to be great. I am so proud that you're doing this. This is terrific. This is awesome. And I was like, whatever you're currently on, if you would be interested in sharing it, we would make a lot of money here. Maybe not a lot of money somewhere else in Dallas we could, but maybe not here, but share it. You know, that's what I was thinking. And in that moment, he was giving me a standing ovation. He was letting me know, hey, I see you, I understand you, I accept you, I love you, I'm for you, I'm behind you. It was exactly what I needed in that moment. In fact, the best kind of standing ovations are the ones that recognize that God sees you, He understands you, He accepts you, He loves you, He's for you. Those are the best kind of standing ovations. The ones where people in our lives that are cheering us on are reminding us that He hasn't forgotten. He sees you. He gets you. He's accepted you. And in His love, He's for you. He's behind you. See, Paul must have known, when Paul was writing Philippians, he must have known, I'm going to be dealing with some people that they might not always find this easy to do, because he gives us kind of the trump card. It's like the ace of spades, you know? It's a gambling metaphor in the church world. Doesn't really work really well, but he gives us he pulls out the, oh, if it gets bad, here's what I want you to think about. If you feel like you can't, remind yourself of this. Here's what he says next in Philippians 2, verse 5. He says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. And then he writes what is now known as the doxology. He gives us this beautiful piece of literature that reads like a poem. It literally could be put to music. He says, who, being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. He says, hey, if you figure out, you know what, this is hard. I don't want to do this. I don't want to clean our house. I don't want to go to the wedding. That's too far. This feels too difficult. I don't want to say that. That's going to be awkward. People might look at me funny. I don't want to do that. He says, remember Jesus, who had some advantages, but he didn't use any of them. He could have levitated at any moment. He could have forced everyone to do exactly what he wanted them to do. He could have used all of his God tricks, but he didn't use them for his own advantage. He says, rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. He says, in fact, look at the way he came onto the scene. He came as a baby. A helpless baby born in a horse's trough to let you and I know that he gets us, he understands us. He took on the position of a servant. If you feel like a doormat, you're not alone. He poured himself out, took on the role of a servant, made himself nothing, so that he could let us know that he sees us and understands us, accepts us and loves us. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself. Well, how much did he really humble himself? Well, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. That he sacrificed. That he gave up ultimately his life so that you and I could have life. And then look at what God does. This is amazing to me in regards to an ovation. He says, therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every single knee should bow in heaven or on earth and under the earth, and that every tongue would confess or acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Heaven basically stood up in that moment and gave Jesus a standing ovation and said, that is what I'm talking about. In another writing, God speaks about Jesus and says, well done, my good and faithful servant. He says, that is what I'm talking about. Great job. You're awesome. I'm so proud of you. This is so great. We needed this right now. Way to go. He says, if you get tired, if you get weary, if you go, I don't know that I can. He says, I want you to think about Jesus who poured himself out on behalf of other people. And the ovation that he really looked for, the ovation that he seemed to actually long for, was the ovation of heaven. And God was delighted in that moment to give Jesus a standing O because of what he did for you and what he did for me. See, I think that is the standing ovation that everybody needs, that everybody deserves, that everybody would thrive if they knew they had it. See, helping you see that God sees you. If I were to leverage all of my life, leverage all that I have, leverage all my time and energy to help you see that God sees you, that he understands you, that he accepts you, and that he loves you, that is the greatest standing ovation that I could ever give you. It's the greatest standing ovation that you could ever give away, is to help somebody else see that God sees you, that he understands you, that he accepts you, and that he loves you. That's what we all need, and we have that opportunity. In fact, I guarantee you that this week, maybe even today, that there's going to be an opportunity that presents itself for you to do this for someone else. And I'm just telling you, for their sake and for your own, I hope that you don't miss it. See, it's worth it. It's worth it for you, and it's worth it for them. And it will allow you to experience what God has intended for you to experience on this earth. Getting a standing ovation is great, but the joy of giving one for someone else, it's amazing.